Now, stay tuned. We have the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show coming up right here on KSCO. Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Good afternoon, everyone. Dr. Future here. Mrs. Future in the studio with me.
Yes.
Yeah, there she is. Pushing buttons away.
Buttons. That's she's got my job. Another.
She's really good at it.
That's right.
Pushing my buttons. The station button, excuse me.
Yours aren't the only one.
No, buttons. Anyway, we also have Bobby.
I have devoted my life to successfully pushing buttons in the right direction.
Yes, I think women are particularly good at that, I must say. I don't know how they figure that buttons. It's hardly biological.
Yeah, I don't get complaints. I just get, what did they call it, deplatformed?
Canceled.
Canceled. Yeah, I just get canceled. No, I haven't actually been deplatformed because I abandoned social media before it got too social.
Oh, lucky you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bobby's on on our science correspondent in San Francisco. Welcome. Yeah.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here.
Is it sunny there today like it is here?
It's partially cloudy, but then there's little specks of blue sky.
Oh, that's good. It's starting to happen over there. It's kind of like that in Boulder Creek this morning. It's just starting to clear. Now it is. Now it's beautiful. It is along the coast here. In the Central Coast, a beautiful day in the neighborhood. And a chance for us to delve a little bit into our science-y type stuff today. The second hour beginning, we're going to have an appearance by Dr. Michael Arnold, who has, as an MD, has put together a whole paper on treating COVID with ivermectin, and he's going to make that available online and talk a little bit about that as another approach to dealing with the virus.
Is that the one at the end of the links page?
That's
it,
right.
It says ivermectin protocol April 4th with Dr. Michael. Is that it?
Yes, that's right. Oh. Not necessarily instead of the vaccine, but as a preventative and as a way of treating it if you do have the virus.
Yeah, and it's just a very sane and logical perspective about the various stages of coronavirus infection and appropriate treatments with other therapeutics besides the vaccine. There's no discussion of vaccination at all, really.
Yeah,
it's all about
media, you'll just
coronaviruses
hear.
and smart ways to understand what's going on and give yourself other options.
Yeah, mainstream media, you'll just hear, get the vaccine. It's available now. It's free.
Yes. Life. Well, it's paid for, but let's not call it free. It's paid for. It's paid for. Billions of dollars in profit to our pharmaceutical friends. Yeah. Let's call them friends.
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't be a crab. Get your jab.
Did you just make that up?
Yeah, I just made that up, yeah. We just offer a slightly expanded version of understanding.
That's true. Things, so. We still have enough free speech to make fun of anyone.
Yeah.
Up to us.
So far. I think an interesting podcast is No Agenda, because they deal with this all the time.
Yeah, and I love No Agenda.
John Dvorak,
he's Silicon Valley royalty from long ago.
Yeah.
Still out there curmudgeoning away.
Yeah.
And Adam Curry of MTV fame, and really one of my very favorite commentators, giving us the Texas perspective on how to not take it all too seriously.
At the same time, having lots of clips from the news media and analysis of them. It's pretty interesting podcast.
And lots of commentary on the true use of our free speech on the internet, which is if you don't like it, go around. Make your own.
Yeah. It's No Agenda.
Yeah.
No Agenda.
Yeah.
Okay. On to the stories this week. We do have some space news I'd like to start with.
Okay. And we do have people who are already on the phone. I don't know if they even know that it's our show, or they just have some product they want to promote, but here they are right at the beginning of our show. Do you want to give them something to chew on, and then we'll talk to them?
The space news, I'm sure none of them want to talk about space news.
Are you sure?
Yeah, pretty much. I think our
listeners like talking about space.
Well, they do, but I haven't even brought it up yet.
Oh,
but okay, let's try it. Let's see if I'm right.
Well, do you want to seed the conversation, or do you want to just see what they have to say?
Yeah, let's let people talk.
All right, dive in. Free Speech Radio, KSEO. Hi, Wendell in Reno. What you got for us?
Hey, Wendell.
You guys are so much fun. I'd rather listen to your program than get a Corona shot.
Well, gosh, that's what you call damned by faint praise, isn't it?
Yeah. I get more healing listening to your program than I do from a jab being a crab.
Yeah, I'm a big believer that good vibes are contagious and health is contagious. That cannot get any mainstream airplay in this day and age, but those days will come back.
Yeah.
Well, I really look forward to this program every week, and I'll tell you something. I feel like I'm joining my friends at a campfire, and you guys are so much fun to listen to, and I love your personalities. Real quick, I don't want to hog the show.
Sure, no problem. Well, thank you, though.
One of the things I would like to ask you, and it's kind of delving into your personal stuff, so if you don't want to do it, you don't have to, but I would really be interested in knowing how you met, what colleges you went to, what concerts, music concerts you enjoyed together, and who your favorite bands are.
Oh, how cute.
Oh, wow.
You should be my Facebook friend.
Yes.
Well, I don't do Facebook.
Oh, you don't? Okay.
I would like to be your friend.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Awesome. All right, Wendell. Well, you are more than welcome to send us real emails at future@ksco.com. And in answer to your other questions, we met at
a movie premiere. Right?
Yes, at a movie premiere at the Kabuki Theater in San Francisco, and it was called Hackers. Or no, Sneakers.
Sneakers.
Sneakers about hackers.
Sneakers.
Yeah,
it was
sneakers
called Sneakers, and it was about hackers.
Robert Redford, I think, was one of the stars in that.
Yeah, and Dr. Future at that time was working for this magazine called Mondo Magazine.
Mondo 2000,
which was one of my favorites, which was a really pre-wired kind of art techie magazine that was popular in San Francisco, where we were both living at the time. And we'll come back after the break, but that is so sweet of you to talk to us about us.
Love you guys.
Thank you, Wendell.
All right. Well, bye more bye. To come. We'll be right back. Dr. Future Show. Hang tight. And got some sponsor messages, got a little music, and then some more good news about the future.
Hey, welcome back to the show. Just a brief note of our past. Thanks to Wendell for asking about that. We did work with Peter Gabriel for one summer where we were setting up the Future Zone at the WOMAD Tour, the World Organization of Music and Dance.
Yes, and we were on the rock and roll tour bus, and we would get up at 4 a.m. and put together this amazing technology, interactive art and dance zone, and then we would host people all day long going through it and seeing themselves magnificently modified on big screens and loving the MIDI interactive music. And
demonstrating all the latest toys and multimedia at the time, which is the mid-90s.
That's right, during Apple's big debut of Alice to Ocean, and Apple was our sponsor at the time.
Interactive Media.
Yeah, Interactive Media. That was a CD-ROM interactive project.
Yeah, and then tear it all down and get in the rock and roll tour bus and move on to the next city.
That's right. Pack it all up. And we even had a really exciting time. You have to remind me which city it was where we had a flash flood that went as we were disassembling our Future Zone at 2 p.m.
Flash flood.
We had to first disconnect everything electrical and put it up on tables, and the water came up to our knees while we were packing it up.
Flash electrified.
But no, we completely survived, had no tragedies, and set it up again by the time we got in San Francisco. Yeah. Anyway, that was quite a ride.
A lot of fun, that was. Thanks for with Peter Gabriel.
The memory tour here.
Yeah. Okay, right, now, so we got another caller.
Yeah, let's talk to Donna. The early Donna, birds here.
Hey, early bird.
Hi, Donna in Scotts Valley. How are you?
Oh, good. Boy, thank you for being there. I was just wondering if you were going to talk 2 weeks ago. If you were going to talk about the cryptocurrency today.
Yes, we talked to the guy yesterday.
We tried to set that up, and our crypto guy is too busy for us.
He says he wants to come on a little bit later this month. So we're going to, we're delaying that for, sadly.
But I do want to say that there was an April Fool's prank that went out that said Joe Biden was canceling Bitcoin and replacing it with Fedcoin. And that sounded pretty serious at the time, but it was April Fool's. So I'd say the news of death of Bitcoin has been exaggerated for now, and it's still a big question mark. So.
And it's still around $58,000. Per Bitcoin. Right,
holding
now.
Its own.
Yeah. It's been pretty steady.
But last week, I asked you if it was going to be with us within 10 years, and you said absolutely. So can you give us a little more? I told about five or six people to listen in today because it was going to be a special.
That's true. So I'm sorry about that. We'll bring the details soon. Bobby, do you want to comment in? I know you track Bitcoin pretty closely.
Yeah. I would say, what's interesting is they're trying to get rid of it in China, but I don't think it's possible. And technically, yes, the IMF, which is the International Monetary Fund, is coming out with their, it's like a Fed coin, it's their digital currency. Yeah. But it is the opposite of how Bitcoin actually functions. Bitcoin is distributed a ledger, while these Fed coins and Chinese digital coins, they are centrally controlled. And it looks like, my guess is, generally what happens is whenever there's a change in the economy, where there's a downturn in the economy, usually what happens is people look for alternative places to store their assets. And so gold and Bitcoin or digital currencies that are distributed look like the best safe haven for that. So I would say learn as much as you can today and find the on-ramp to get into digital currency. Go to Coinbase or whatever way you exchange your dollars for Bitcoin, because there might be a fluke day where the stock market crashes or who knows what happens. I think that's the day when everybody will be trying to rush in. And if you're at the end of the line, you're not going to be able to make it with
you better be on it.
Well, I want to say something about Bitcoin.
Yes, please.
Okay, so I see Bitcoin as the proof of concept of the entire universe of digital currencies. It's kind of the first, and it's the most well-known, and it has the most people who are using it, so it actually functions like a currency. But the thing about currencies is that it's only valuable to people who are willing to take it. And so that's why black markets exist all over the world, is because there are people willing to take things, whether or not they are condoned by the central government. And as far as Bitcoin goes, in the future, Bitcoin is going to be a very inefficient way to conduct your digital transactions compared to other things. And therefore, it's going to have the kind of value like legacy currencies have now. I mean, you can spend $25 for an old silver quarter if it meets your criteria, right? And same thing with Bitcoin. It's like there will always be a sort of a memorabilia market, maybe for everybody who was holding in it when it was less than $1,000 and then sold it when it was more than $50,000. That is a historic period of time for this digital artifact. But in the future, these people like Catherine Austin Fitz talk about what's going on with the Fed and their desire to get into the digital currency market. And of course, all governments want to have a monopoly over their currency. And just as the internet transformed our communication, ultimately the digital universe is going to transform our money. And there is going to be a very fast network of information that is being designed by everybody who's interested in money today, which is everybody in the world. And that very fast network of information about our transactions is going to be managed to keep the world stable economically. And Bitcoin is one of the ways that people figured it out initially, and it's certainly not the last. And according to Catherine Austin Fitz, the disaster capitalism around the rioting last year in all of the cities where there are Federal Reserve banks was a real estate move to depress the property values so that financial interests, fintech interests could buy up the properties more cheaply and then basically upgrade them to give them the fastest 5G or more than 5G digital networks so that they can basically be faster than the stock market in terms of handling digital transactions. And then once that's happening, everybody will be going to that because it'll be the least frictional form of managing your transactions. But there'll be a myriad of other ways to manage your digital transactions because any kind of system where people keep track of what they owe each other will functionally work like their own currency, and the information universe can facilitate anything as currency. So there's a lot of things that will come out in the wash in the future as everything gets more efficient.
Okay, well, thank you for all that, but I'd like to ask you one more question. You know, people say time is going by so fast. It's just faster than ever. Is something happening on our universe or in our universe that time is going faster? I heard we're gaining 1 second a year or some silly thing like that.
That's a great question. Dr. Future has a big smile on his face as he's Googling that one.
You know, well, since 1970s, a total of 27 leap seconds have been added to the official time because the Earth's rotation is slowing down. And since then, the record short day has been broken a total of 28 times. Now, in 2021, days are spinning faster, nearly 0.5 milliseconds shorter than a full 24 hours. So now the Earth is speeding up. So, but it's not so that you would notice. I think what you notice is that our culture is speeding up more significantly, that with the internet, with everything connected, the world is at our fingertips, and we are also all working from our devices. We don't have to travel to go to work so much anymore. And so the perception of time and the way in which we play with time on a day-to-day basis is shifting, and that changes our awareness of what's going on, more so than I think than any actual physical measure of time.
So at one time it was going faster and now it's going slower. Right?
Yeah. You can just Google, is time speeding up? And you'll find that. You'll find that information in more detail.
Well, thank you very much. And I look forward if you can announce it ahead of time when we're cryptocurrency.
Absolutely. Has. Yes. I appreciate your call on that, and we will let you know as soon as I get confirmation. Okay.
All right, everybody. We've got to go to our next break. Thanks for these great calls and questions.
Okay, bye-bye.
We'll be right back. Here's our sponsor.
Okay, welcome back to the show. Yes, we've got a few comments from the audience.
Peanut Gallery, our favorite online.
Yeah, Greg, thanks for this one. Time is like a roll of toilet paper. The closer you get to the end, the faster it unravels. Yeah, okay. And then Gabby, yes. She says, time seems to be faster. It's because each year of your life, it's a smaller part of your existence. Like when you turned 1 year old, that was 100% of your life up to that point. So each year of your life, the older you get, it's a smaller part of your existence.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And plus, you've filled up your time with so many other things that are holding space. It's hard to create new space for those new things that take time.
So if you're 90 years old, 1/90th of your life is going by.
That reminds me of my friend Diane Schatz, who I just have to say, Diane, thank you so much for that lovely animation of 10 years of the sun as my little birthday greeting. That was really sweet. So her mom used to say the cutest things. So one time someone asked Diane's mom if she, now of course she was pretty close to 100 at this point, I think, when she asked her, and she said, so how's your memory? And Diane's mom said, oh, it's great, as long as I don't use it.
Yeah. Oh, I might mention that yesterday was the anniversary of the discovery of warp drive in the Star Trek universe.
Oh, right.
2063.
Yeah, 2063. Oh, great. So we should do the math
and,
here.
the Picard show. There's one of the Star Trek shows is called Picard. Uh-huh. About Jean-Luc himself. And the season 2 trailer has just been released for that.
And it's, Picard by far is my favorite Star Trek franchise.
Oh yeah, it's really good. I mean, Picard's a Shakespearean trained actor.
But the epic story that it's telling about the relationship of humanity and the mutants of our technology and technology in general, when it's itself is an alien existence and intelligence, is just breathtaking. The way that they create those issues.
They have great writers on that show.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, they have a 1 minute season trailer that's very good audio wise, and it's all about time. So why don't we try playing that and see?
Oh, it seems to be the theme of the day.
Yeah, at least.
You have that? I can play if you're plugged in.
Okay, I am plugged in. Okay. It's about time. It's the Star Trek Picard season 2 trailer. Here we go.
The true final frontier is time. Time can turn even our most impulsive, our most ill-considered actions into history. What we do in a crisis often weighs upon us less heavily than what we wish we had done. What could have been? Time offers so many opportunities, but never second chances.
The trial never ends.
It's the reoccurrence of Q, one of the great characters of the Star Trek universe. Quite hilarious. He comes back and he puts our species on trial for crimes against the universe.
Which, of course, is a return to the trial of the previous Picard.
The incident at Farpoint. Mm-hmm. Yes, we have a caller, Mr. Peter?
We do. We've had Steve from the harbor has been patiently waiting.
All right, Steve.
Hi, Steve.
Hi, Steve.
Hi, friends. Hi, Bobby.
Hi, Steve.
I wanted to just say, I'm going to tie this together, Mrs. Future, because you know a lot of stuff. So you're commenting on Bitcoin, which is kind of fascinating to me also. And I'll explain why I think it's fascinating. So in 1970, I remember living in an apartment with big bedrooms, sharing with one other guy a two-bedroom place with a pool on the cliff overlooking the ocean. And that was like, my share of the rent was probably like $80.
Wow.
Yeah, so I that stands out in my mind. We had other things around back then that were probably more or less, but that was an especially good deal. Mm. So then in 1983, I moved into a one-bedroom and a three-bedroom house on Seabright with two other people for my share of the rent was $150. Mm. Then in 89, I got a studio in the Jewel Box for $300, a little tiny thing, but it was my own little place. It was three bills. It was considered a little high for that
time, huh?
Yeah, the guy that moved out told me he could get something cheaper, and he did. He got a room in a nice big house in Aptos for $165, and he thought he'd scored. So I was happy to pay the $300. So anyway, I'm going to fast forward. So now I'm just going to guesstimate, but try to get a room in a house in Santa Cruz is, runs around just, you know, just a room in a house is $758 to $1,000 roughly, give or take. And getting your own place is $2,500 and up.
Wow.
So with that being said, with the exponentially inflated market of housing, there's a couple things I found really fascinating was because when I moved to Venice Beach in 01, I was there at 9/11, you could still, the rents had already skyrocketed around the Bay Area, but you could still get an apartment in Venice for $800 and Santa Monica.
Nice.
It hadn't hit. Dr. Feature hadn't hit quite yet, but it would hit in the next 3 years down there.
Hmm.
So all of this stuff is time sensitive. And my point is, I have in the past tended to lean towards the right politically because I like self-reliance, and I tended to lean that direction.
Uh-huh.
However, now my viewpoint is shifting because, like I said last week, they're not keeping track of the amount of people coming in as opposed to how many houses they're building. Residences they're building. So what we're running through is a supply and demand shortage. Basically, there's nowhere to live if you don't have a lot of money. And because of that, I'm starting to lean towards socialized housing, and that I think people, well, I'm almost getting to the point like Mrs. Feature was talking about earlier, because if you're not real lucky like Bitcoin, like if you didn't buy in 2001, if you bought a house in Encinitas in 2001, you would have got in for 260. Now it's over $1.5 million. You know, it's like if you would have bought Bitcoin under $1,000, you would have made $50,000 per coin. Should housing really just be a giant gamble, or should we basically help people, help provide for people?
I believe this is one of the most important conversations that we can possibly have. I've been an advocate of what I call the belly button economy. And if you have a belly button, then you deserve a stake in the economy. The conversations among our lawmakers are just useless. It's just useless because our entire government is just a fraction of the amount of bribes that are happening on the part of multinationals. And our democracy is really in the hands of people who are practicing it amongst themselves. And our leaders, well-intentioned or not, their ability to help us is limited by their inability to help themselves. Housing is the ultimate local issue, isn't it?
And well, Mr. Fitcher, I think if it's going to be a gamble, it worked okay in the 50s. Gambling on housing worked okay because there was a lot of cheap housing. My mother got us into a house in Manhattan Beach on a single mom's salary. So that's totally almost impossible now. She worked as a waitress at two jobs.
Yeah.
So that was a good gamble in the 50s, but now that is no longer possible. So are we going to gamble on people's lives that they're lucky enough to afford a house when clearly most people can't afford to buy a house?
Yeah. Well, see, this is just one of these really complicated problems that there is so many reasons why people can't afford to buy a house. There are so many people who basically exist to make a buck off of other people's misery, which to me seems like everybody who's using mainstream media now, do not have an incentive to solve problems in ways that are inspiring and mutually fair and open to all kinds of conversations and points of view. There's a real leaning towards demonizing and punishing and blaming instead of taking a deep breath and thinking about how can we help the most people in the most friendly way possible. So we have to accept that we can't look to the past to solve the problems of the present. We have to solve the problems of the present by coming up with what we have access to amongst ourselves.
Good point. I think that's absolutely right on target. I think we need a new model. That's why I said I've shifted my political view on housing. It does no longer fit in my formula that I had in the past. We need a new model. We have over 400 million people in the U.S., and we probably have about 200 million houses. So, like, what happens, right? Like, you got to figure something else, right, Dr. Feature?
Absolutely. I mean, we've done some stories on 3D printed neighborhoods, for example, and how the new 3D printing technology will rapidly bring down the cost of housing. We see tiny houses. We see an RV revolution. I think one of the big films right now is called No Madness, which is all about that. So we're starting to see more forms of housing beginning to develop as the costs become astronomical.
Yeah, and in terms of you saying you used to see yourself as sort of leaning to the right and now you're not so sure anymore, and I've found myself in that boat too, because I, like you, really share a belief that self-reliance can solve most of the problems that everybody faces. And self-reliance plus cooperation is a force magnifier. But that only happens if people can be in free will relationships with each other. It doesn't happen when people are forced to do things against their will. And so we have to create incentives. So how do we get the people with all the money on the same page as the people who need the things that money can buy, who have not been able to access all that money? How do we give them the same incentives to solve problems in mutually beneficial ways? And
Mrs. Fish, I do something fun. When I run into the coffee shop, the one by El Palomar or other ones, you know, and I'm grabbing a bite, and I notice the person's a young person, a lot of times they're in their 20-somethings. And I go, how's it going? Like, what do you think of the housing market? I love to share their opinion. And I've never once heard someone say, no problem. You know, I got it covered.
I'm inheriting my parents' house.
Every one of them, like, their shoulders slump forward and they sigh and they'll go, you know, they're like, they're like paying 85 to 90% of their income on their rent. You know?
Yeah, that's sad.
Right? Yeah.
Well, thanks for taking up the topic. And I like hearing what you guys have to say.
Yeah, it's an important topic. Thanks for bringing
too,
it up.
Steve. Really, let's have lots more conversations about it. Santa Cruz is a great place for making new ideas work.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks, Steve. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye. All right, for our break, everybody.
All right. Boy, this hour's going fast.
Got any of those headlines in, man.
Must be getting older.
That's right. Less percentage ahead, more percentage behind. In the waiting line, do you believe in what you see? 9 to 5, living life.
Okay, welcome back to the show. We got about 10 minutes before the top of the hour. I'm going to try to fit in a little space news here.
All right.
Okay, remember last week?
Just enough time for space.
You remember last week on Tuesday on our show, SpaceX launched Starship 11.
Yes, that was the first time that we didn't get to watch the attempted landing of the new Starship series because it blew up in midair.
Well, no, wait a minute. It soared to a maximum altitude of 6.2 miles, 10 kilometers. That was planned. And the 165-foot tall craft checked the number of boxes on the way down. It was doing well, very well. Mm-hmm. But it didn't stick its landing. Instead, it exploded, as you said, in a massive fireball. And you know why?
Why?
Plumbing problem.
Oh, really?
Plumbing problem, according to Musk.
An explosive plumbing problem. I hate those.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. As Musk said, ascent phase, transition to horizontal and control during free fall were good. A relatively small CH4 leak led to fire on engine 2 and fried part of the avionics, causing hard start attempting landing burn in the CH4 turbo pump. This is getting fixed. 6 ways to Sunday, says Musk.
That's what happens when you flush your CO4 or whatever.
CH4, which is methane, is the propellant for SpaceX's
Do not
Raptor
flush
engines.
That down your plumbing, for sure.
Yeah. It's burning farts.
A hard start refers to ignition when there's too much fuel in the combustion chamber and the pressure is therefore
too high.
You're
saying that rockets get flooded engines? That's a flooded engine that caused it to explode? Wow,
too much
can you
fuel
imagine if that
chamber,
happened on
yes.
your vehicle, on your regular car?
Carburetor problems before there were, now there's no carburetors, so. But the old timers would know carburation flooding.
Right.
Yeah, flooded the carburetor, you
No
idiot.
Carburetors in a rocket. We call this a rockerator.
Gas too much before you started. So anyway, that's what happened. I wanted to report. support that.
Okay. Well, I'm glad they're getting it under control.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, I am not going to get a ticket on one of those flights.
No, six ways to Sunday. But you might be able to pay for it in Bitcoin if you do get a ticket.
I hope so. Yeah. J.P. Morgan says Bitcoin's going to go to $150.
You can buy a Tesla with Bitcoin, right?
That's right. Today. That's right. You can get a Tesla. So if you're going to get a Tesla, you can get a ride to Mars, too.
Yeah.
I would think. I think it's $250,000 to go to Mars. So that's... Bitcoin's at 60 now, almost 58. It's got a ways to go.
Yeah, okay.
But maybe by the time we're ready to go to Mars.
Yeah, by the time we're ready to go to Mars, we can buy it with the Bitcoin. That sounds good.
With one Bitcoin.
Yeah. One Bitcoin will get you to Mars. Okay, other space news. NASA's tiny helicopter snapped its first color photo on Mars.
Ooh, yeah.
Yes.
Color photos from the red planet coming in.
They dropped off the little helicopter away from the mothership.
Uh-huh. You mean the first color photo from the helicopter.
The Ingenuity helicopter, right.
Right.
And they're getting ready. It's a low-res photo. It's up on our links page. Ingenuity is still standing beneath the Perseverance rover and not too far away when it was taken.
I like your other article better about the picture of the meteorite from Mars.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, you skipped that one.
Yeah. Well,
he was just getting there in order.
Yeah.
You got to talk about Ingenuity taking color pictures and then show the picture of the boring picture of the red rocks, and then you can show the interesting picture of the laser rock.
Yeah, what was interesting was that they found, looks like a meteor on Mars.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, it's a really nice picture of that.
Yeah, and meteors on Mars, and ironically, at the end of the other article about Ingenuity's pictures from Mars, or no, it is this article about the laser rock with Mars, they analyze rocks by hitting them with a laser and listening to the sound and then using that to make sense of what the rock is made of. And they have a profile that is from a Martian meteorite that landed on Earth that they used to put on to Perseverance so it could identify meteorites on Mars.
Oh, sure. It should have patterns, you know, pattern recognition.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's see if it's a similar. Yeah.
There's a Martian meteorite that came to Earth that has been sent back to Mars.
It looks kind of like turquoise. It's kind of this greenish.
It's pretty.
And you can see the pock marks.
Yeah, now it has like eight little laser etchings in a row you can identify. Yeah.
Yes.
Right. Are you going to let anybody else talk? Because the phones are popular today.
Okay, I just wanted to say that the rover's technology is called Sherlock, which makes sense. It's exploring what this is, which stands for Scanning Habitable Environments with Raman and Luminescence for Organics and Chemicals.
Ooh, and that leaves those little laser marks. Mm. Sherlock doesn't use a magnifying glass, but it leaves a laser mark.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, so we have a
caller? We've got a few. Let's say hello to... Hi, Paul and Salinas.
Hey, Paul.
Hi.
Hey, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
First time on your show.
All right. Well, welcome. What's on your mind?
It's fun to listen to you guys in the afternoon. Well, I'm doing other work usually.
Glad to keep you entertained.
About housing.
Housing, yes.
About housing.
Yes.
There are developers here in Salinas that want to build in excess of 5,000 units, mostly individual and single family dwellings up north of town here, north and east of town. Hmm. But the cost of permitting is getting in the way. At $130,000 total for all the permits they have to get in order to build a unit. In other words, every unit of the new owner is going to be paying, part of the price they're paying is $130,000 worth of permitting.
Just for a regular...
really valuable information, Paul. Maybe you guys should have...
Wow.
Maybe you guys should have your planning department do a public event and publicize why they have to charge that much for each of those new houses and really make a case for it. Make people famous.
Good luck with that.
Well, hey, look, it's a public office. The planning department may be appointed, it may not be elected, but it's still a public office. And I'd say if the community had a meaningful first name relationship with the people in your planning department, they could ask important questions and maybe even work together to bring those costs down.
Well, yes. And where I was going with this is just that it really matters who you vote for, because those people report to the city council and the city council is responsible for what's going on there.
Yeah.
I hear that they recently reorganized. I'm going to use the politically correct term. and got somebody out of the way that was sticking things up really bad, but it's not going to solve the overall problem, which is that the city's looking for sources of funding, and they look to the developers as deep pockets, and therefore they're going to take it out of them. And then they can't build houses that people in this market can actually afford.
Yeah.
And until that gets fixed, we're not going to get the new housing units. There's an apartment complex going up not too far from where I'm sitting right now that has been delayed by over a year because of the permitting process, which ultimately required that they change the way they were building it from a largely steel structure to a largely wood structure. And that was cost reduction. And the reason they had to do that was because the permit fees, the delays and the fees just ate them alive financially.
And well, so I think a very good area of research is to really, somebody should do a line item of the permit fees and have a public debate about whether those are good uses of taxpayer money, whether those costs are useful in getting the housing problem solved.
An accountable planning department? Are you kidding?
Oh, come on. They're at their best, they are well-intentioned. They are there to make sure that people don't build things that are unsafe and kill each other in the process. So common sense can be applied even to bureaucracy.
There must be a much less expensive way. You know, let's go back to the 60s.
Paul, you know what? We are at the end of the hour. I so appreciate your talk and everybody who's on the line. This is a Dr. Future Show on KSCO. Yeah. Yeah.